Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we're going to take a look at the tools, the tips, the techniques for organic gardening with a couple of guests. Today, John Hendrickson, Senior Outreach Specialist for the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at the UW-Madison, and he directs the 2008 Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. And that helps you get started in small-scale vegetable production and marketing. It's a three-day school. We'll certainly be talking about that school. It's in January 18th, 19th, and the 20th, held here in Madison. We'll find out some more about that as we talk with him. And also with Tricia Bross of Ryo, Wisconsin, 19-year organic growing veteran of the Dane County Farmers Market on Madison's Capitol Square. She's one of the school's instructors. And between the two of them, they know an awful lot about organic gardening. It could be vegetables, maybe flowers, too. We'll talk with them a bit about that as well. And certainly, we look forward to your questions as we move along here today. And we can talk about a lot of different things in the organic area, and we'll certainly appreciate your questions and comments. I know lots of people are interested in organic, doing it the organic way. And, boy, if you have a question, been wondering, this would be a great time to call in. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. We'd love to hear from you. John Hendrickson, welcome.
Great to be here, Larry.
Yeah, thanks very much for coming by. Tricia Bross, thanks for braving the weather and driving to Madison.
Thanks for inviting me.
Appreciate it very much. Tell us about your farm.
Well, I have a diversified vegetable farm in Ryo. I own 20 acres of land, but only about 4 of that is actually in vegetables that I sell. Mm-hmm. I raise 40 to 50 different crops. It's actually easier to tell you what I don't grow.
40 to 50.
Yeah, that includes a lot of greens, especially some of the Asian greens and things that people are becoming more familiar with. I don't grow any sweet corn, and I don't grow any rutabagas and a few other of those common storage root crops like parsnips and celeriac and a few things like that. But lots of greens, lots of heirloom tomatoes, a wide variety of things. And then I sell at the Dane County Farmers Market on the square, and I also have a CSA. And that is a setup where the customers pay the farmers money in the spring, or actually starting right about now, and then we provide them a box of vegetables for 20 to 25 weeks during the growing season.
And it's a great deal for everybody concerned, as a matter of fact.
It is a great deal for us as a farmer. It gives us money when there's nothing growing out there. Or if it is, it's so buried in snow right now that we can't get to it. But it gives us money during the off season, and it helps people get connected to a specific farm and to how their food is being grown.
Yeah, so we can talk a little bit more about that if people have questions about it as well as we move along. John, that school for beginning market growers has been going on for a while now.
Yeah, actually, since the first year was 1998, so yeah. Here we are on the 10-year anniversary.
And are there still openings at the...
Yes, there are. Yes, there are still openings. And probably the best way for folks to find out some more information or if they're interested in finding out about how to sign up, they can visit our website, which is www.cias.wisc.edu. And there's a place to click on education and training there.
Mm-hmm. So cias.wisc.edu. Yeah,
or, of course, people can Google Beginning Market Grower School and they'll...
Yeah, what kinds of things, generally speaking, do you cover?
Well, it's a three-day intensive workshop designed for folks who are serious about getting started, not just growing vegetables, but as a business, marketing and selling them. And we really try to cover everything that they're going to need to know to do it successfully. So from the soils, through the greenhouse, through production, through insect and disease management, through marketing and business planning.
So pretty much... what you need to know to get going.
That's right.
Without the land and without the hard work. You still got the land. You still got the hard work to go to accomplish. But at least it gets you off to the right kind of start, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and what the neatest thing about the class is folks like Tricia Bross and other growers who just do a phenomenal job bringing their personal experience, their hands-on know-how over the years to the class. I have three grower instructors that are the primary teachers during the 3 days. We do bring in some university specialists at times to give targeted presentations on things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really a chance for folks to learn from the masters. The farmers who are out there have been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. And Tricia, what kinds of things do you talk about at this? Will you be talking about?
Well, we kind of do a sort of a tag team approach on most of the topics. So like on the topic of marketing, I will talk about the farmer's market, and then I'll pass it off to another farmer who does exclusively CSA, and then another farmer will talk about selling to restaurants. And so we kind of use that approach through the whole class. Because the thing that's nice about having the three different farmers there is that, you know, there is no yellow brick road for organic farming. There are multiple ways to get there. And so by having three different farmers teaching it, you see some different ways of approaching things and different ways that you can set things up. And I think one of our favorite segments on the class is things I would do differently if I knew then what I know now.
Oh, that always gets everybody going a little bit.
It does. It does.
Lots of good experiences to share there. Well, I tell you what, and I'm certain as we listen here, there are some people who may be thinking about getting involved in something like this, and probably many more who aren't. And if you're one of those who are, we certainly appreciate your questions and comments. If you're interested in learning more about this school, give us a call. But also, if you're just sitting back and you're one of those folks that says, well, I like gardening and I like to do it organically and I've got some questions about it, I'm not going to be a market person, but I still have those questions, you can join in too for sure. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. What kinds of questions, do you ever get a question that surprised you at one of those events?
I don't know that there's some that have surprised me as much as, you know, a lot of people come with really some in-depth questions and things that maybe they word it in a way that I hadn't thought about it.
Hmm.
And sometimes I'm surprised with the answers more that come out of me than I am with the questions people ask, because once again, I didn't always think of it in that way, but the question brings out a response that it's like, wow, that's really quite interesting. As a teacher in the class, I find it always an educational experience as well.
Isn't that great about being a teacher?
Yes.
You get to learn so darn much, John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, this is a class for beginning market growers, but most of the people in the class come with, you know, a lifetime worth of gardening experience. You know, they grew up gardening and, you know, they have their remedies and tips and things that they've been doing that they, you know, are free to offer during the class as well. We keep the class size small, so there's a lot of interaction, a lot of chance for participants to answer questions just alongside the instructors.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'll tell you what, we've got several people want to ask you questions. So let's go to the phones and talk first with Lou in Kenosha. Lou.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I happen to be home because it's snowing. Hey, here's my question. I have a very small little, like an herb garden. It's only 10 by 10 by 10. But I'd like to do everything organically, and I'd like to start a worm farm. And, you know, to make my own organic fertilizer.
Okay.
I'm wondering if your guest can help me out by giving me some idea of where I might be able to purchase it locally as opposed to internet, because I can't see anything that tells me what the size of this thing is going to be. So,
yeah. Well, let's... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if you can help me out, let me know someplace locally or if they come in sizes or what. I want to do the right thing, and I don't know how to do it.
All
Thank
right.
you.
All right. Let's turn to Tricia. Tricia?
Well, I can tell you I've done a lot of reading about this because it's one of my personal dreams to get going with worm farming and doing some of that. And you're in Kenosha, right?
Yes.
You should check out Growing Power, which is an organization in the Milwaukee area. and they do a lot of work with earthworms. And they're very accommodating about having people tour their facilities and talking with them, and you can even get worms from them and all sorts of things. They're just great people. I would just, if you have access to the computer, I would just Google growing power, and you should be able to find the information from there.
Okay, so and it's an organization, right?
It is an organization. They do some urban farming in the Milwaukee area.
So if you put down growing power organization in Milwaukee,
right.
It's going to, in a search engine, it's probably.
Growing power is probably in the Milwaukee phone book as well. So
another way to find it. Yeah. All right, good tip. Thank you very much for calling. Lucy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Lucy.
Yes, I'm in Madison, and I do container gardening in my little bit of backyard, and I do it organically. My question is, I have two flats on either side, and they all spray like crazy and do the grass crud and everything. What can I do to, hopefully, because I do try to eat my herbs and everything else, what can I do?
You know, that's a question that comes up not only for the homeowner like yourself, Lucy, but probably from a farmer, a garden farmer like Tricia or John. You've got experience with this, haven't you?
Yeah, well, at a farm, to be certified organic as a farm, you have to be assured that you're not going to have pesticide drift from neighboring farms. And so there are rules about the amount of distance has to be between fields. 25 feet is the rule for organic certification. Although there are some ways around that, if you get signed affidavits from your farming neighbors that they don't spray, then we can work around that a little bit. In terms of an urban setting with neighbors, you know, I guess it depends on how well you know your neighbors in part as to whether you can request that they change their practices or try not to spray on a windy day or
unfortunately both of them are managed by a management company, so the owners may or may not have anything to do with what actually happens, because they come and have, you know, power teams that cut the grass in 5 seconds sort of thing. So
Well, the management company itself should at least be in a position to let you know that this is happening, I would think.
Well, they have to post signs, or at least they put little signs on the sidewalk, but
it could be worth a call to them to see if they could give you a 24-hour phone call in advance of when they're going to be spraying. You know, there's obviously things you can do in terms of planting things along your boundaries. You might not want to plant anything that's going to go real tall, because you probably want your sun for your container garden.
And I live in the inner city area, in the Vilas area, so, I mean, we are very, very close as far as all the lot lines.
Lines. Yeah, boy, that is a very, very tough, but a very common kind of concern. It's short of putting up a fence.
Oh, my question, I guess, additional is then, I obviously, when I bring things in really well washed, I mostly do herbs and like heirloom tomatoes and a few veggies. So,
yeah.
But I'm assuming washing and just peeling, but other than that, I don't know.
Yeah. Anything else to be done?
No. There's not really anything else to take pesticide residue off of the produce.
So, thorough scrubbing and then peeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one thing that you could certainly do is, you know, not harvest immediately after the neighbor's lawn has been sprayed.
One of the things I think you could find out, too, is what materials they're using. I mean, certainly they should be able to tell you what materials that they're using, and there would at least be then some indication of the amount of time that the materials might be volatile in the air around the plants. So if you could find that out, at least that gives you some help.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much. I wouldn't hesitate at all to call the company. Mm-hmm. Not at all. And Dave in Birchwood, we'll turn to you next. We'll get to you in just a minute. Just to remind everybody, John Hendrickson and Tricia Bross, our guests today as we talk about gardening organically. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with John Hendrickson today and Tricia Bross about organic farming. I just wanted to mention organic gardening, I should say. I wanted to mention to Lucy, because she's from Madison, there are some lawn services that are organic. lawn services, and there's, I know, one in Madison, and she's from Madison, so she might look that company up and offer that as an alternative to for her neighbors. Talk to her neighbors about it, and that'd be another thing she might do to help out. That'd be a very direct thing. Dave in Birchwood, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've got a garden, and I'm starting up a vegetable stand, and I'd like to go into having some of my stuff certified. Now, how do I go about getting my garden certified for organic?
Okay. Who wants to start here? I bet you both can probably. Tricia, you want to start?
Sure. The first thing is to find an organization that you want to work with. There's several in Wisconsin, the Organic Crop Improvement Association, which is OCIA is their alphabet letters, MOSA, which is the Midwest Organic Services Agency. And first thing is to get in touch with an agency, you know, basically the rules are pretty much the same because we have a national law, but some each agency implements it in a little different way with their fees and their inspections and all of that. Talk to one, find out what you need to do for them, and then tell them that you're a person who wants to get started, and they will have they have people that are trained to help new people get involved with this. One of the things you're going to need is before you can be certified, your land has to spend 3 years without any chemical fertilizers or pesticides added to it.
But that won't be a problem.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
That's
then
a great start.
You know, yeah, it's a great start. And then you just have to find all the other little rules that you have to follow through. There's a lot of things that people use on their gardens that I don't want to say that they're bad, but they're not necessarily allowed for those of us who are certified growers. I'm thinking.
What would be an example? Yeah.
Yeah. In particular, there's a spray called it's a BT spray, which is a bacteria that kills cabbage worms. Mm-hmm. And as organic growers, we have to use a dry powder, but a lot of home gardeners use one that has petroleum distillates in it, and we're not allowed to use that if we're certified organic. So there's some of those that are little minor changes that you may have to make, but I would contact an organization and start there.
You know, and Dave, I just to let you know, I just typed in OCIA in the web search engine here, and the first thing up was organic certification with rules and a lot of information. But, John, you wanted to add something.
Well, I was going to just add to what Tricia said that best to start right now doing some of the record keeping that is required for organic certification. When your operation is certified, the inspector needs to see your receipts for your seed orders and information about any products that you've used in the garden. And best to start a organized filing and record keeping system now so that when comes time for inspection, you have all the information that the inspector is going to want to see, including Tricia mentioned the 3-year rule in terms of not having used prohibited substances. And if he can go back and have proof of that with, you know, records from previous years, that'll be to his advantage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, go ahead, Tricia.
Yeah, and since this is the time of year when we're looking at all those seed catalogs, one of the things that you want to keep in mind if you want to be certified in 2008 is that if a seed is available organically, you must buy the organic version, even though it's more expensive than the conventional version. So that's something to think about right now if you want to get certified in the coming year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to look up that site, that website. And
yeah. You might consider the beginning school for market growers, too, which is we were talking about earlier. I don't know if you heard or not. That's coming up in January 18th, 19th, and 20th. And if you have time to get involved in that, the 3 days is really set you up with a lot.
Where is that located at? I came into the show late.
Okay. Well, let's let John give us some more information about that.
Sure. The 3-day school is going to be held in Madison here on the UW campus. The 18th and through 20th, that's a Friday through a Sunday. And it's an intensive workshop to give you everything you need to know. Hopefully everything you need to know to get started growing and selling vegetables and marketing them.
So it's soil fertility, it's crops, it's plant health, plant management, cover crops, equipment needs, the whole thing. marketing, right. Economics. What's the cost for that, by the way, John?
$275.
$275. Okay.
And you get a book called Startup Vegetable Sustainable Vegetable Production from Startup to Market. You get a 3-ring binder full of all kinds of resources, and then lunches and snacks and break foods are
all included in that. Okay. All right. So it turns out to be pretty good. $90 a day for pretty good deal for the information you get out of it.
That's some good information. It's worth it.
Yeah, you bet. So, and where does Dave or anybody else go to find out how to get enrolled in that?
Well, I gave the website earlier, www.cias.wisc.edu. You can also give out my phone number for folks to call and get more information on that, 608-265-3704.
265-3704, and the area code 608. Mm-hmm. All right.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thanks for calling, Dave. Astrid in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, John and Tricia. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a comment for Lucy, who had the problem with pesticide drift from a lawn company.
Yeah.
There's a state law that she can get on a list through Wisconsin DATCAP that the law provides 24-hour notification where the lawn company has to call her and tell her that they are about to spray in her neighborhood.
That's very good. And I knew of that law, and I should have mentioned it. Astrid, you're a lifesaver. Thank you.
I have a question for Tricia.
All right.
Tricia, have you tried compost tea compared to regular compost, and what's your experience if you have? Do they work the same?
Compost tea at this point is still up in the air as to whether or not we can use it on certified organic farms.
Okay, now tell us, for those who don't know, what is a compost tea?
Well, compost tea is when you take compost and you basically put it in a bucket with water. And the preferable method is to use something like a filter from a fish tank where you're putting air into mm-hmm. the process, and you let it set for 3 or 4 days. And then you have a spray that you can put on the plants. And my opinion from, we did this when I was a kid all the time, although I have to admit it was probably more manure than it was actually compost. Mm-hmm. But it worked faster because it was in a liquid form and the plants were able to take it up through their leaves instead of it being worked into the soil and taken up through their roots. But right now, since they're not allowing us to use it until they decide if that process of sitting for 3 days has added anything that we don't want in the garden, we can't currently use it.
Okay. All right. But it does speed up the plant growth for you a little bit.
I think it does, yeah. And I think it helps just the plant. A lot of what we're trying to do in organic agriculture is to, instead of killing the bugs, we're trying to help the plants survive the bugs a little better. And compost is one of those things that basically helps, if I can use an analogy to humans, it builds the immune system of the plant up a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thanks, Tricia.
Thanks, Astrid.
Thanks, Astrid. Appreciate it very much. Astrid Neuenhaus, who is a sometime guest on the program as well, with a good question of her own. Roger in Waupaca, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Roger.
Hello. My question is on trying to grow apples organically. I've had apples for several years that are of the bearing age, and I've been trying to get good apples by spraying, but I get very few good apples even by following the spray procedure, so I'm wondering whether it is possible to grow apples organically without spraying.
Hmm.
It is possible. It is extremely challenging, especially here in Wisconsin. Most of the organic apples that you see in the stores around come from the West Coast, where they don't have some of the pest pressures that we have here in the Midwest. There are growers that are doing it. It is extremely challenging, and I can't really go into specifics because I work with vegetable crops rather than fruit crops.
And that's the same for me, too. I'm not an expert on apples.
Yeah, you know, it's probably one of those, boy, how do you keep the insects away?
Right.
And I suppose if you're using Dwarf trees, you can do some covering, but row covers and so forth. But
well, and I know that Turkey Ridge out in Gay's Mills, they used to do some stuff with sheets underneath the trees, and then they would knock the plum curculios off the trees into the sheets and gather them up. But very labor intensive.
Yeah.
It seems like it's more of a problem with a disease problem than insects. The apples always get very deformed and deformed and scabby. And
Now, some of that's due to the insects, too.
It's insects, and it's also the humid climate that we live in the summer. Just we have much more disease issues in vegetables, too, than they do out on the West Coast, as John was talking about, because they just have a drier climate than we do.
Yeah. All right, Roger. Someone else may have some ideas for you, so stay listening. We'll see you. We can get somebody to call in with who's been doing it themselves. And give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments, or maybe you've got something to add on the organic apple issue or growing them. Joe in Wausau, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Joe.
Hi there. I did manage to grow somewhat organic apples last summer. I went to a apple grafting clinic with Bob Tomesh, and he had a handout about putting Ziploc bags around the apples and thinning the clusters to one apple. Because you can't really use all the apples that the tree produces, at least I can't. So you you put a baggie, a Ziploc bag, around one, and I even did two apples, and put a staple on each side of the stem then, after you close the zipper, and then cut the corner off the bottom of the bag. And it was amazing how blemish-free those apples were. I did spray early in the season for scab. I used Captan, but after that, I didn't have to spray any insecticides.
So you covered them all, or not all of them, but a lot of them with a bag.
Yeah, you decide how many apples on the tree you want to keep, like 25 or 50 or 100 even if you want. Mm-hmm. And then you you put that Ziploc bag around the apple and then staple the bag closed after you close the zipper. You put a staple on each side of the stem, and as the apple grows inside the bag, then those staples will keep the bag from opening up and allowing insects to get inside.
It's a great example of a solution that that a home owner might be able to do, but
I guess
a commercial grower of any scale would
true.
Be extremely labor intensive to put baggies around.
Yeah,
but when you figure how much time it takes to clean your sprayer and mix the chemicals and everything. It might be
horse of peace, or even easier.
Yeah.
And Bob Tomesh is also a guy who's on our show pretty often.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if he's got that bulletin available through UW Extension, that little handout. I'll have to check on that and see. That's a great idea. Thanks, Joe.
You bet.
Yeah, appreciate that very much. That was a quick answer.
Yes, it was.
That's the great thing about Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, especially on Garden Talk. All kinds of good folks out there who have great responses for us. Linda in Blanchardville, we'll turn to you. Hi, Linda.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm calling in about the apple issue, and I have a friend who has a farm called Mindspring Farm, Mineral Point, and she has started an organic apple orchard, and she's this has been part of her life study. So, and she founded a Wisconsin or Upper Midwest group for fruit growers, organic fruit growers, and so she would be an excellent resource for your caller about the apples. I don't have a phone number, but if they would Google Mindspring Farm Mineral Point.
Mind as in the mind with a D on the end. Mindspring Farm?
Right. And her name is Deidre. The farmers are Deidre and John.
Deidre and John.
And she would be a great resource, along with Bob Tomesh, which I heard you just mentioned. He's a great resource also.
All right. And Mindspring Farm in what city again, or what area?
Mineral Point.
Mineral Point,
Wisconsin.
Okay. All right.
Right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck with that.
All right. Appreciate it very much. Another good tip. Roger in Iowa County, your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi. One comment on apples and then a couple other questions I had.
Sure.
Another thing I know for organic production is just good pruning so you have a really open tree so you get lots of airflow instead of moisture holding in there.
That's a good point.
And another, we have an organic grower near us out here in Iowa County, and he uses a lot of, Caitlin clay. It's a clay spray. It helps deter the insects because they can't see the fruit with the white.
Okay.
It's kaolin, K-A-O-L-I-N, kaolin clay, and yeah, that's exactly what it does. It's actually being used some. I've seen it in the catalogs this year for vegetables as a way to keep the insects from being able to recognize the vegetables.
Then I had a comment. I do worms. I have worm bins. I just use Rubbermaid plastic containers, like 15 to 18 gallon storage containers.
Mm-hmm.
Have them in my basement. I have about 8 of them, and I produce roughly 90 gallons of worm castings a year out of my basement with no problem.
Wow.
Wow.
And the questions I wanted to see, so they're really easy, and you can, as long as you, I started with about half a cup of worms 6 years ago, so it's pretty easy. Two things I'd like to hear you talk about. It mentioned in the preview that you were going to talk about cover crops, so I'd love to hear about using cover crops in the garden and both establishing and killing. And also, I think a really good thing to cover would be just the definition of spraying through natural, through organic, because I talk to so many people who say they're organic growers, and, oh yeah, and then I was out spraying with Roundup.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay.
Well, I'll tackle the last part of that first. The words organic and Roundup really shouldn't be used in the same sentence. It is, though, organic farmers do have, we do have sprays that we can use. They're just usually bacterias or they're natural sprays. And they're usually things that, like the bacteria, the BT that I mentioned on the cabbage worms, that kills only worms in that family, and it doesn't kill anything above or below in the food chain. So it's considered a spray that we can use. The term natural is pretty wide open. There is no definition of what natural means. This was part of the reason why I think the movement came about to come up with a national law that defined what organic meant so that everybody had a common language with which to speak about it. But unless you specifically talk to the farmer and find out what their practices are and what they're spraying, you have no idea what it means to be natural.
Natural could be, I use natural Roundup.
That's right, exactly.
Okay. And John, do you want to make some comments on cover crops? Or Tricia, do you want to go ahead with?
Sure, I'd be happy to. For the home garden, a lot of growers are really constrained in terms of space, so they may not have maybe limited in terms of what they can do in terms of cover cropping. But cover crops are wonderful in terms of building the soil, in terms of helping to rotate crops around so you don't get disease buildup in a field. But for a home gardener, home gardeners can learn from what farmers do, but there's some things that they definitely shouldn't get involved in. Specifically, a lot of organic farmers use rye and vetch as cover crops, and they're just excellent on the farm. But they grow really dense and thick, and most homeowners are not going to have the equipment and means to
grind
cut
it
them
up.
And chop them and incorporate them.
Yeah.
So for a home garden, it's best to stick with some of the things like oats and peas, which you can establish very easily in the fall, and then they winter kill, and so your garden's all ready to go in the springtime. A nice cover crop to use mid-season is buckwheat. Again, very easy to establish. You have to be careful with not letting it go to seed because it is a prolific seed producer, and you don't want to turn your garden into a buckwheat field, but as long as you chop it down when it's flowering, you'll be fine there. So those would be my recommendations. Even just planting, even if you've got just a narrow strip that you don't happen to be using at a particular time of the season, throw some cover crops in there. and get the benefit, particularly if you're growing, if you're planting legumes like the peas or clover. That's going to fix nitrogen, which will be available to subsequent crops.
All right. Let's turn to Tom in Rhinelander next. Tom, hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm involved in a nonprofit, and we're growing food for our local food pantry. We have about a quarter acre under production. Last year, we produced 2.5 tons of produce.
That's good.
We try to be as organic as possible, and I was wondering if I would benefit from the grower school, or if that's the scale I should be looking at.
Well, we certainly have growers at all scales. Most of the people that are taking our class are starting out at a very small scale, maybe even less than where you're at. So you'll certainly learn a lot of information on the production side of things. It sounds like your organization is exclusively geared towards growing food for the food pantry, so the marketing and side of things might not be that interesting or that relevant for what you're trying to do. But you certainly get lots of tips and suggestions for how to do what you're doing efficiently and make best use of your space. You'll get lots of information about succession planting so you can get more out of your plot than maybe you already are.
So there's some good value.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is you can ask your own questions too, which I think is really a real benefit of it.
Mm-hmm.
You're there together for 3 days, so there's
yeah,
a lot of conversation that goes on.
We have some pretty intensive discussions, too. Every year we choose 6 crops that we spend, an hour on each of those crops, John?
About 45 minutes.
45 minutes. So you get all the details on in great depth about those 6 crops. And we tend to choose some of the more major crops. So that may be useful, too, to just get specific production tips for those crops.
Hmm. And do you know those crops? What are you zeroing in on this year for that little extra?
This year we are going to be talking about tomatoes. We're going to be talking about carrots. We're going to be talking about garlic, winter squash.
And those are the 4 I was remembering, too.
That gives you an example, though, Tom, and those are probably all things that you guys grow.
Oh, we're going to be doing bunched greens, kale mm-hmm. and collards and crops like that.
And are we doing lettuce and salad mix?
Maybe.
Is that the 6th mm-hmm. one?
That could be. So there you have it, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And we'll take some more calls, too, coming up. John Hendrickson, Senior Outreach Specialist with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at UW-Madison. He directs the 2008 Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. Tricia Bross of Ryo, Wisconsin, a 19-year organic growing veteran of the Dane County Farmers Market on Madison's Capitol Square. One of the school's instructors as well, and we're talking about that school, but also just answering organic questions in general today and having some fun doing it. Give us a call with your question at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we get back to our conversation about organics, I want to just mention, yesterday on the program, we talked about a bread recipe. Someone called in with a great bread recipe, and I want to let you know that Al Reland of our staff has resurrected the recipes page at Wisconsin Public Radio under Larry Mueller's recipes. So there's a link called Listener Recipes under the Explorer WPR menu, and you can go to that and get that recipe for making that great bread that the person was commenting about. And I'll have to go back and take a look at it myself because I didn't get the recipe down either yesterday. So just go to the WPR website and look under Listener Recipes under mine. And Jim in Menominee, you have a question for us or comment. Hi.
Hello. Actually, I have a comment or a couple comments in regard to growing apples.
Yeah.
And first of all, I'd recommend that anybody interested in growing organic apples or really apples of any kind would get a copy of the book entitled The Apple Grower, which was written by Michael Phillips. He's from New Hampshire, has an organic orchard, so his climate and problems are similar to ours, and the book is just full of all kinds of great information. It's in its 2nd edition now.
The Apple Grower by Michael Phillips.
Right.
Okay.
And somebody called in and commented earlier about Deidre down by Mineral Point.
Yeah.
The organization that she's involved with is called the Upper Midwest Organic Tree Fruit Growers Network.
Upper Midwest
Organic Tree Fruit Growers Network.
Tree Fruit Growers Network.
And the easiest way to find more information about them is to go to the Moses Organic website, which is the website of the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service.
Yep, and that's...
And then this group has a page on there. So you go to Moses Organic, one word, .org/treefruit, as one word. Oh. And you'll get to their webpage, and there's a Yahoo email group that this group has. They usually get together for a meeting at the organic conference that Moses puts on, and they usually sponsor a couple of workshops in the summer where you actually, more or less a field day at an orchard, which have been real interesting. I've gone to a couple of those.
All right, wonderful.
So that's lots of information for somebody interested in growing apples or other tree fruit.
Yeah, thanks, Jim.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having this great program. I got tuned in a little late, but I'm enjoying it.
All right, and I thank you very much for calling and for contributing. That, as I mentioned earlier, that often happens. When a question gets raised, sometimes our listeners have lots of great answers.
Larry, let me just say that Moses website that he mentioned is also a good resource for anybody looking to become certified organic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good place to go to get those questions answered. So it's moses.org, I believe, is their website.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Barb in Chippewa Falls, we turn to you next. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Larry. I have three comments to make. Well, two comments and a question. The first is the little further comment on the Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection of Wisconsin's program for the Landscape Application Pesticide Registry. And you can still get on that. I think the deadline for 2008 is February 1st.
Okay.
And then what happens is you, within a 9-block circumference of your home, so like you're in the middle and it'd be 1.5 blocks in all directions, you go around and write down all your house numbers and streets and send it into them. And then this is available to all the landscape application people. And by law, they have to give you a 24-hour notification.
Yeah.
And I had one fellow who was very good to me. I would call his company, and if the wind was blowing right at my property, he would delay that application for me. I would talk to him, so it would be a really good place to start. And they can't just blow you off then because you are part of the registry, and they can't just, you know, hang up on you. And then the second thing I want to say is, the University of Minnesota Extension Service has a free video they will send you, and it's called Maggots for Lunch No More, and it gives a complete rundown on how to bag your apples, exactly how to do it, and it's quite humorous, too, so it's really kind of fun. And if you wanted to get in contact with them, it's the University of Minnesota Extension Service. The phone number is 800-876-8636.
8636, okay.
And they also have a email order at extension.umn.edu, E-D-U, order code VH-7655.
7655.
Yeah, so... And I have the video, and I've been doing it for several years, and it's great.
It really works.
It really works, yeah. Once in a while, one of those plum curculios will sneak down in past the staple, but for the most part, they're really quite good.
Oh, that's good. And so the 800 number was 800-876-8636.
Right.
And the website, again, was...
Order at... extension.umn.edu, order code VH-7655.
Barbara, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, one more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
In my garden, I have for about 3 years had an anthracnose problem with my green beans. I've tried rotating, and I've sprayed the rotenone spray three times at two-week intervals. And I was just wondering if your guests had any way I could not spray. Is there any way you can get that out of your soil once you're kind of stuck with it?
Our guests are whispering among themselves here. What do you think, Tricia?
Well, we're talking about a process called solarization, which is basically where you put plastic over the soil and heat it up to basically kill off the anthracnose that's left in your soil. I'm not sure how that will work for the anthracnose, and you have to leave it on for several weeks in order for the solarization to do any work. You might think about maybe this next year doing that and not growing any green beans for a year, or maybe, I don't know if anybody's ever tried doing green beans in containers. You know, if you had sort of a long trough-type container, you should be able to plant some in it, but that way you could get it up out of that soil that has the disease in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I pretty much have to put that on, and I don't like spraying at all, but otherwise I don't get any beans, you know.
Yeah, understood.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Barb. Appreciate it very much. Peter in Platteville. Your turn. Hi, Peter.
Hi, everybody. I had a quick question. I've got some land that has been set aside, not tilled or anything, for at least 12 years, maybe as many as 15. And I was thinking about maybe this year breaking it up and renting out plots to people to grow. And I was wondering if I could say it's organic or if there's a way you have to certify it to become organic.
Hmm. John?
Well, I guess it would partly depend on the circumstances and the people that you're working with. If you are working with growers that would want to market and sell and would want to be able to say that their products are organic, then you would need to go through the certification process. If you're just dealing with home gardeners that maybe just would like to know and have the assurance that the land has not been used and not been sprayed, then I wouldn't go through the paperwork and expense of organic certification. Mm-hmm. So I guess it would depend on the end user and what their needs would be.
Yeah.
What kind of expense is involved?
To get it certified.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're going to get an operation certified, there are fees. In most cases, you become a member of the certifying agency. A couple were mentioned by Tricia earlier, OCIA, which is the acronym for Organic Crop Improvement Association, and the other one that's very active in Wisconsin is MOSA, Midwest Organic Services Association. And there's a fee for the inspector to come to your farm, look at your records, look around at the land, and ensure that things are being done according to the organic rule. And so it's going to cost $250, $350 to be get organic certification.
Yeah.
I do think that if you were renting the land out to another person who's going to be some sort of grower, that they would be the ones getting certified, not you. You would just have to sign a form for them that there have been no chemicals on the land for so many years. But if you just want to, as John said, rent this out to homeowners, you might also want to educate yourself a little bit on what organic means, because if you want to keep the land that way, you wouldn't want people to come in and think that Roundup is organic, as somebody, you know, kind of mentioned earlier. So you might want to think about what kind of sprays or products you want to have used on this land by the people who rent it from you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Nancy in Salem, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Well, this is my first time calling, so I'm very honored. I just had a really basic question about composting. What type of manure is acceptable for composting? Of course, I understand horse is, but I've heard dogs, I've heard goats, I've heard chickens. What is good and what is bad?
Okay.
Well, I wouldn't use any carnivore of any type. You want to use strictly the herbivore. So horse, cow, chicken, goats, all of those would be acceptable. If you're looking at being specifically certified organic, there are a lot of rules about managing compost and, you know, how many times it needs to be turned, taking temperature, that kind of thing. If you're not looking at being certified organic, you can do the make a pile and let it sit for a while. And by a while, I mean a year, maybe two, and it will become compost eventually. So you can use pretty much any herbivore. I wouldn't put any dog
any carnivore. Right. All right. Thank you very much for calling. John Hendrickson and Tricia Bross are guests today as we talk organic gardening with them here on the Ideas Network. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here for this edition of Garden Talk. We are visiting about organic vegetable gardening with John Hendrickson, Senior Outreach Specialist with the Center for Integrated Ag Systems and at UW-Madison, and he directs the 2008 Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers, helping you get started in small-scale vegetable production and marketing. And that school's coming up January 18th, 19th, and 20th. So we've talked a bit about that with John and also with Tricia Bross of Rye, Wisconsin. She's a 19-year organic growing veteran and will be one of the instructors at the school. So we're talking about the school, but we're also answering the questions for home gardeners as well, those who may not be involved in market gardening. And certainly you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. We'll be back with our guests right after the news. Stay with us. Talking organic gardening now with John Hendrickson, Senior Outreach Specialist with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at UW-Madison, and Tricia Bross of Rye, Wisconsin, a 19-year organic growing veteran. Really pleased to have them with us today as we talk about the School for Beginning Market Growers. You can find out some more about that. We'll tell you some more about how to do that a little later on. We've mentioned it once, but we'll mention it again. And also answering your gardening questions. And I know, John, there was a question that came up or a comment that came up earlier from a caller, and maybe I'd have you expand on that a little bit.
Well, yeah, going back to the person, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name or of the person, the grower that was having a problem with their green beans and the anthracnose disease problem. They mentioned they were spraying rotenone for that, and that is a insecticide product that's used in organic farming. To the best of my knowledge, it's not a disease control.
Yeah.
Now
we should have mentioned that. Yeah, probably should have mentioned that at the time. But and she may have just had a different product in mind when she said rotenone. But rotenone is for insects and not for
Diseases.
Diseases. Just to make that plain. Virginia and Bailey's Harbor, thank you for calling. Hi to you.
Hi. I have more questions about Roundup. And the reason is I have a chemical-free vegetable garden, and it's just for my family. It's in an old farm field that was been fallow for over 50 years, so that's not a problem. But I have a lot of trouble with Canada thistle and things trying to get into the garden. And so every couple of years I spray the outside of the garden fence with Roundup because I just plain can't control it any other way. That's one thing. Another thing is the best person that a lot of local gardeners are getting compost from, because he delivers and everything, is great compost and manure, but he uses Roundup on his fields, and he feels he's organic. But I'm just wondering what the health aspects are of Roundup. I mean, am I getting Roundup in my garden from spraying outside of the garden, and what is that going to do to me?
All right, John, comment?
Well, as chemicals go, Roundup does break down very rapidly. I guess in terms of the spectrum of dangers from most dangerous to least dangerous, it would be more towards the least end of that spectrum. There are things that are far more toxic in the environment than Roundup. Now, you know, the flip side of that is it's also the most commonly used, maybe perhaps overused chemical that we have because it's so effective. So I guess that maybe that's the other side of that coin. I don't have specific knowledge in my head about the health impacts, but there is research going on at the university about that. Warren Porter in the Department of Zoology, I believe he has a whole web page about his research looking at the effects of very small doses of chemicals that are in our drinking water.
Mm-hmm. Warren Porter?
Warren Porter in the Department of Zoology.
So you could probably Google Warren Porter Zoology UW-Madison and get to his website.
Okay.
So that would be a good place to go.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Andrew in Sheboygan, hello.
Hello. I'm a teacher, and in the summer the last 2 years, I've been trying to grow a pumpkin patch so that students at my school can have pumpkins in the fall. But I've been having issues with cucumber beetles that have been pretty much devastating my crop, and I was just wondering, are there any organic solutions to the cucumber beetle?
Okay, let's go to Tricia. Tricia?
Yeah, there are some things you can do to trap cucumber beetles or to prevent them from initially landing on the plants. One of the things that we do is we transplant most of our winter squashes and pumpkins. It gets them a little bit ahead of the beetles. That way they go out into the field as full plants. And then when you put them out in the field, you can use row covers. They go under brand names like Agribond, Rime, things like that. But what you do is you put a hoop in the ground, put the row cover over the top, and use either bags of sand along the edges to hold it down or just bury it with dirt along the edges, and that keeps the insects from getting to the plants. And you can leave it on until the plants are about ready to bust out of it. And then what I've gone to is sticky traps. Cucumber beetles are attracted to yellow. They're attracted to the color of the flowers. And so I've effectively used little yellow bowls. I'm thinking of like the little plastic bowls. Usually when the Packers are doing really well, you can find them in the grocery stores, the little Solo bowls, and you can fill them with a little bit of soapy water. And the bugs are attracted to them, and they fly in, and they're killed. The problem with them is that you'll get some of the good bugs in there as well as the bad bugs. But it is an effective trap, and has worked well for me. Some people use yellow traps that you can buy that are just sticky yellow paper that you stick up kind of about the height of the plants, and the insects fly into it. So those are some effective things.
Mm-hmm.
There are some organic insecticides that you can use. I'm not pulling any names to the surface right now. Actually, rotenone that was mentioned earlier was one that we used to use in the past. I personally have stopped using it because it impacts the bees too much, and bees are struggling right now in the world, so I don't really want to use a product that kills the bees. John's looking it up in the catalog that we have with us.
So we can, as he's looking that up, he may find something more, Andrew. In the meantime, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, in addition to rotenone, there's an organic-approved product called Pyganic. It's a pyrethrin-based insecticide that's available. It's quite expensive, so if you're just a home gardener, you may not want to invest in that kind of protection. But if you're a market grower and you've got a crop that you're trying to get in, then you might want to use that.
You can also use the very effective method of killing bugs, which we just call the thumb and forefinger. And particularly with cucumber beetles, if you go out early in the morning, they don't fly until they warm up. So if you go out early in the morning, you can usually catch a lot of them and just smush them. I highly recommend disposable like latex gloves for smushing bugs. But other than that, it's really an effective way to kill them if you have a small patch.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Get some rubber gloves out there, and away you go. Summer in Hillsboro, your turn. Hi, Summer.
Hi. I was calling about quackgrass. I have 3 years into my garden spot, and I've done different things to tackle the quackgrass. I don't have any equipment like a tiller to deal with it. And wanted to know.
And you want to do it without chemicals.
Correct.
Yeah.
How big is your garden plot?
It's probably about 60 feet by 40 feet, a decent size.
Pretty good size, yeah.
It's a good size to be hand digging all that quack grass
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I was hoping that your answer was going to be that it was smaller than that. Well,
yeah, I've covered the whole thing in plastic. I did that last year mm-hmm. and killed it off, but you know, it leaves you without a garden.
Mm-hmm. Well, one approach might be to try to tackle it segment by segment, and you know you're always going to be dealing with it because you know the grass is probably on the borders and it's going to keep invading. But one thing I did on my farm, and that actually hasn't been brought up yet during the show, but I also have my own farm and grow and market vegetables. In addition to my work at the university, but one year I took a particularly bad area in my field that had a lot of quack grass and cultivated it several times in the spring. And I was I'm at the scale where I was doing that with a small tractor. You might be doing that by hand and trying to dig out some of those roots. And then when it came time to plant vine crops, I planted pumpkins very heavily in that area. And anyone who grows, vine crops, pumpkins in particular, know that once they start running and those vines start growing, they can really quickly and effectively cover the ground. And to this, this was probably eight years ago, and that part of my field is still relatively clean. I worked very hard at removing as many of the rhizomes as I could prior to planting the pumpkins, and then I planted the pumpkins, and they shaded things out very effectively. And I was able to get a crop out of that part of the field that year because I planted those pumpkins.
I did that in a section, and I've been doing that in the last couple of years in the worst section of the quack grass, where originally when the garden spot was plowed with a tractor, all the quack grass got pushed to that area. Yeah. So that was the worst area, and so I have kept that into like winter squashes or pumpkins or melons or something.
Yeah.
You can also use, we talked about the cover crops earlier, buckwheat is an effective crop that sometimes will work to smother quack grass. I haven't found it as effective, but that's because you have to get it established before the quack grass is really strong. And so sometimes that's a problem. But more my strategies for dealing, because, we perpetually fight quack grass. If there's ever anybody that finds the cure for quack grass on an organic level, that person will be quite wealthy. Either that or the person who finds a marketable use for quack grass, one of those two things.
Yeah.
But we use a lot of black plastic that we plant into, and then we heavily mulch the aisles between the plastic. That allows us to get a crop out of that area. And I have noticed over the years that the quack grass where we have used plastic year after year, the quack grass is weakening. So, it's just not getting a chance to establish during the year. So eventually, I hope we're going to win.
What would be a good starter for the spring for cover crops? Just to throw out there. I mean, you mentioned rye earlier.
If you don't have equipment to handle the rye after it's grown, that I wouldn't necessarily recommend that. I would use oats and peas in the spring as a cover crop. One other thing to say about quack grass is that if you can wait, it's hard to wait to get rid of the quack grass because once you see it, you want to try to get rid of it. But if you can wait to till until the quack grass is about 6 to 8 inches tall, that's when the plant starts moving its reserves from those rhizomes in the ground to producing its seed stalk and seed head above the ground. And so if you till it then, it's at a weaker point. It'll be more susceptible to being taken care of at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Robert in Decorah, Iowa. Your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just what I use, the lady just talking had a problem with quack grass. And I have a plot relatively the same size as hers was. And what I do is I save up all my newspapers all year long, and then once the quack grass and I plant the plants, and then once the quack grass starts to grow also, I start to cover all of the land that's not covered with
Your own plants.
Plants, and then I do that, and then I put either hay or straw or grass clippings on top of the newspapers. And then in the fall, the newspapers are gone. I mean, they turn into maybe mulch or something, and it's good fertilizer also. But that's what I've kind of come across.
Yeah, and that's not a bad idea either, is it, Tricia?
It's a good small-scale garden idea. My only caution would be to make sure you take out all the glossy stuff that might have any inks that you don't want in your soil.
Yeah.
But other than that, as long as it's all soybean ink, it should be just fine.
Because yeah, that the college I went to in Cedar Falls, that's what they used in their gardens, and that's kind of where I got the idea.
Yeah, good. Thanks, Robert.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Judy in Madison, hi to you.
Hi, I have a problem in my raised bed gardens, and I plant mostly flowers, some vegetables in the back, but with earwigs, and I've tried all the common remedies to try to dispose of them, like beer in the tuna fish cans and insecticidal soap, and we run out there at 11 o'clock in the evening with a flashlight and spray all the flowers with soapy water and get some that way. But then also the rabbits are taking a lot of our things, and so we have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to chase the rabbits away, so we don't get much sleep in the springtime. And I was just wondering, we've tried with the rabbits, we've tried the, what is it, coyote or wolf urine,
yeah.
We've tried mothballs, we've tried rabbit fences, you name it, we've tried it, and this year was particularly bad with earwigs. And I was wondering what an organic farmer does.
For earwigs, yeah.
Yes.
Well, one thing you don't live. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I actually don't have a problem with earwigs, so they're not one that I have to struggle with a whole lot.
I'm thinking maybe they eat mostly flowers.
Well, I would say that that's probably a good guess. They also probably are a little bit more. Remember, I'm growing in fields, so it's a little bit different. Ecosystem than it is in a backyard where you have a lot more shade and your individual yard may be shady, but 40 feet away somebody else's is not, or whatever the perfect conditions are for earwigs. And I don't see a lot of them in the fields. And
I've actually never heard any organic farmer complain about earwigs, so
I'm a little bit at a loss to
provide a solution.
Well, someone had told me there is an organic product that ends in earth. I don't know what it is.
Like
that,
diatomaceous earth?
Oh, maybe that's it. But I don't know. When would you put that down?
Well, diatomaceous earth is
used for slugs.
It's used for things that are soft bodied, and basically what they do is they crawl across this, and it's a kind of a sandy product, but it's very sharp to little insect bodies.
Yeah, must be the stuff they said, yeah.
You could always try that. It's more of a barrier thing that you put around your stuff. I don't know if that would work for the earwigs or not.
Oh, and so you don't dig that into the soil.
No, leave it on top.
Yeah. Uh-huh, I see. Now, as far as rabbits, do they eat a lot of your crops?
Well, once again, I have a dog, I have a few cats, and I have a really great barn owl that seems to keep our rabbit population is pretty much in check.
Uh-huh.
I hear from people at the farmer's market a lot about rabbits, but you already said the suggestion I give them. The only thing that really works is fences.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you might try, I've seen in the garden center some of these motion detector things where when they break the motion beam, they spray water.
Oh.
And maybe something like that would startle them, and that would be enough to send them running. But other than that, other than fences, I don't know what to tell you for the rabbits.
And the rabbits seem like they get used to things. They're smart, and they get used to mothballs, and pretty soon that doesn't work anymore. Everything.
Yeah, fences is what is.
Right. So the fence, I guess, is the only thing left.
Yeah, that's probably the best.
And some of the thing with fencing is the rabbits will go underneath it, so you almost have to bend the fence down flat on the ground and then go upright. So you have to have some way of staking that down to the ground.
Right, yeah. We have had trouble with that, too, with them going under the fence.
Yeah, but if you make an L with the fence.
Right, down into the ground.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you much.
Good luck.
All right, good luck. Thank you for calling. Amy in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Amy.
Hello. I have a small garden in my backyard, actually two raised beds, and I grow a lot of garlic, and I also grow green beans in there. And I was just wondering, I dig the garlic up, of course, in mid-July. What is there a cover crop that I could use to plant until I plant the garlic again in the fall?
In terms of a summer cover crop, I would think your best bet would be the buckwheat because it grows really well in the midsummer. You might have a harder time getting some of the more cooler season cover crops like oats and peas to establish in late July.
So,
and it's also, you know, something that was going to grow quick, and you'd be able to get rid of it in actually plenty of time before it's garlic planting time.
Okay, so I could just hoe it down then when it comes time to dig up or dig it in?
Yep.
Yes. Yep. Either way would work with buckwheat.
But again, you're going to want to do that before it sets seed.
How long does it take to set seed?
Oh.
I don't have a very sunny garden. I have oak trees.
Yeah. It's actually pretty quick. You may actually be able to do two plantings of buckwheat before it becomes time to plant garlic.
Okay.
And that second planting, you know, may be killed by frost before you'd have to kill it yourself. Just would depend on your particular situation and the weather that particular year as to how many crops of buckwheat you'd be able to fit in.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Corky in New Berlin, your turn now. Hi.
Hi. I had a comment about using clover as a cover crop to attract bees. It works great. Everybody needs bees in their garden to help pollinate and whatnot, and it really works wonderfully. And I wanted to also add about the lady who had problems with container gardens. If she puts them on wheels, she can always wheel things a little bit out of the way. I know she doesn't have much room to work with. Maybe that would help.
Yeah, it's another good idea. Thank Great. You. Thanks,
You're
Corky.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. And Gail in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I listen to your program all the time, and I keep hearing people that have problem with weeds. And how to keep it quack grass and crabgrass and all the other stuff under control. And since I've been gardening now for 50 years, I'm going into my 70s, about 20 years ago, I figured out, I go around to places that are renovating. I use carpeting, the kind that doesn't have the foam on the back.
Yeah.
And I haul it home in my truck or the back of my station wagon, and I cut it in foot and a half wide strips. And then after my garden is rototilled in the spring, I very carefully on one end lay down the 20-foot strip of carpeting, which I walk on, and then I go over about 6 to 8 inches for the
next one.
And do the next one. Then it holds in the moisture. The weeds don't come up. Later in the summer, you know, if they do come under the carpeting, by then the plants are big enough. Now, what I've been doing lately is not cutting it in strips and just hauling home these great big, you know, 80-inch room. I lay the whole thing down.
And
I cut
holes.
Little squares in it.
And away you go. And I wish we had more time to go to talk with you, but that's a great idea. And I thank you very much, Gail. And John and Tricia, thank you so much for being with us today. The time flew by. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
Don't forget the Beginning Market Gardeners, Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Gardeners, January 18th, 19th, and 20th at the UW-Madison campus. And go online. You'll find out some more information about that. Just type in 2008 Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Gardeners, and you'll find out more. Thank you very much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.